and our last four sessions or talks for the afternoon. So with no further ado, I'll turn it over to Rich.
Thanks.
Thank you. So my talk's sort of a change of pace, and then I'm not really talking about treatments and fertilizer effects. I'm talking about methodology. And my talk is really about more than just comparing manual and automated systems. It's really about, we've been using these automated systems for several years now, so it's really about how we use the automated systems to sort of provide insight into how to best reallocate resources for our manual sampling campaigns. And so, you know, automated systems have been around for a while. We've had them for about 5 years now. They provide really high temporal resolution data, really good quality data. They're expensive. Ours got blown up by the lightning this year and is going to cost $250,000 to replace. But they work really well when they work. And because of the expense and everything, they're not really suitable for large-scale programs. So, like, if you're here this morning, Shane Ogilvie gave a talk. She's got 144 plots, two chambers in each plot. You know, nobody's going to give me $2.5 million to automate that. So manual chambers still are the sort of default system for the crux of our experiments. And there's no really one-size-fits-all protocol. There have been efforts to standardize them, and things have moved along there. We've made a lot of efforts there, but really what it comes down to is sort of how do you sort of maximize the use of your limited resources while still maintaining the quality of your data. And that's what we're looking at. So when we talk about resource allocation, we're really talking about how the total number of samples you can deal with during a season. And that depends on chamber allocation, which is really dependent upon your experimental design, and that's going to be set by what it is you're trying to accomplish. But then there's how many samples do you take per chamber every time you go out. Most standardized protocols require a minimum of four, but, you know, are there instances when you can get by with less? And then there's you're going out frequently during the season. How many times do you repeat these measurements? And then once you've got all that data, how do you go ahead and analyze it? What sort of a fit model are you going to use to put your data together? So all of these things come together in resource allocation. There's only so much money you've got. You've got to figure out where's the best place to put it to get the best bang for your dollar out of this. And so most of the chamber optimization studies sort of focus on how to optimize individual flux measurements. But what we're really interested in is that seasonal estimate, because that's what we use to determine treatment differences. If you're doing small plot replicated work, it's that cumulative emission. That's what you're comparing across sites. That's what we're interested in. So our objective was to compare cumulative emission estimates obtained using the two systems to sort of see could we adjust our manual sampling, and we were comparing N2O flux patterns as part of all of this. So this is the automated flux chamber system. Our system uses a GasMet DX4015 FTIR gas analyzer connected to a Licor 16-port multiplexer, which controls 10 to 14 chambers. We started out with 10. We wound up with 14 at the end. There are two of these systems in the field at any one time. The key things about this are that we're getting six or seven measurements from each chamber, from each plot every day over the course of a season. And so the number of samples we get depends. So the first year we got 876 measurements. The second year we got 1,323. This year we got 301 in just over 2 months before the thing got hit by lightning. And this is the kind of data that we're getting. So the little blue area, oops. The light blue ones are sort of just ambient air running through the system. The first arrow is where the chamber closes. You get a little blip, then it sort of settles down, goes up. So we're averaging, calculating a flux based on about 60 data points. Each one is averaged over 15 seconds. Then the second arrow is where the chambers close. They come down. We flush them with zero air, opens the next chamber, continues on through the entire day. They run whether it's raining or not. They just run continuously. So the manual chamber is just your standard steady-state chambers. The variations that we did are we use ambient air as our time zero, and we take a sample, basically 12 samples every time you go out, the beginning, middle, and end of each of the blocks. average them out. That's the sample that we use. We take a single time point. We chose 20 minutes as our single time point for this, and then we adjusted sampling days. So the first year we sampled 43 times, the second year we did 61, this last year we did 36. Everything else is sort of the same. We standard GC analysis, area under the curve analysis to get the cumulative emissions, and then we compare from there. So what we did at first was we did a preliminary study. We put chambers out near the university. We sampled them 101 times during the season. We did four time points, 0, 10, 20, 30 minutes, plus a time zero, plus an ambient air sample. And then we looked at that data and sort of said, how can we calculate fluxes? So the first thing we did was linear regression. Then we had linear regression with some data filtering where we looked for data points that were clearly bad and we removed those. And then we used that data set and we fit them to the Hutchinson-Mosier in R model using that. And what you see here is basically the HMR model comes out high, predicts a little bit higher cumulative flux than you would get with linear regression. And that's sort of standard. Other people see that all the time. And so it's about the model. So then what we did is we went through and we took each individual time point. So we took time 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, subtracted the zero from it. Then this is the actual time zero on the chambers, calculated them again. And you can see the longer the time interval, the lower the cumulatives come. But the only real significant difference in this data set is the HMR is significantly greater than the delta time 30. With 10 and 20 minutes, they're about the same. But across the linear regression, there was no significant difference between them. And then if we took the time, we replaced time zero with an ambient air sample, everything bumps up a little bit. But the real significant one is it has a big effect on the HMR and on the first time point. If you use a short time interval or HMR, those first two data points really define the curvature that the HMR picks up. And by the air samples were tended to be lower. So over the course of an entire season with 600 measurements, the ambient air averaged out at 327 plus or minus 6 parts per billion. Over 1,200 individual time zero measurements and during the same time scale, it was 331 plus or minus 15. And there's a much higher probability of finding high values, high time zero values, than there is in finding a high or outlier value for an ambient air sample. And it really pushes them up. So because of this, we sort of said, okay, 10 minutes is too short, 30 is starting to get too long, 20 was about right for us. So we went back and we took data from the last study, and we looked at, from this study, we did the cumulative looked at just the daily fluxes, calculated using either linear regression or HMR with all of the data points and an ambient error is time zero versus just a single time point at 20, and these are the relationships there. So the dashed line is the one-to-one line, and you can see that the data is has a nice linear relationship. The HMR, again, tends to overestimate and pulls things down. The linear regression, they were pretty close to one-to-one. If we go to the 10-minute one, everything shifts to the left. If we go to 30 minutes, everything shifts to the right. So for us, we decided that for this study, 20 minutes would be an ideal time interval for that. So then we go back and we look at the automated data. The top graph is the data obtained over the course of a season, daily fluxes using manual chambers. The bottom is using the automated chamber. On the far right, our panels where that first event, that first big event there, is blown up. And really what you see is that the automated chamber provides way more detail on what's actually happening. What looks like a single event is actually a series of small events. And so in this time, because with the manual chambers, we're not seeing all of that detail, they tend to underestimate what that total flux is. But if we go out to the second flux event, the second big flux event, this was when the split application, again, we see there's more detail there, but because of the way things were timed out, this one overestimated what the actual flux was during that time period. So the real question becomes, over the course of a season, what's the impact of this? You've got some underestimation, some overestimation. What really happens there? So in 2014, we had these five treatments out. The solid bars are with the automated chamber with the FTIR analysis. The lighter bars are the manually sampled chambers using gas chromatography. And you can see there was no significant difference averaged across treatments between the two methods. And we're also picking out basically the same treatment differences are shown in here. And this is, you know, the automated chamber was based on 896 data points or 896 flux measurements. The other one was based on 40. We go into 2015, we added a couple of treatments. We're seeing the same thing. There's still no significant effect of the chamber type or the sampling method. 2016, we get exactly the same thing. So in the second year, we had 1,300 data points versus 60, and we're still seeing no significant difference between the two of them. So basically what it comes down to at the end here is resource allocation for us is really all about strategic sampling. And you've got what we started out with. You know, the chamber allocation, the number of chambers you're going to put out is determined by what you're going to do, what your objectives are. So that really doesn't come into this too much. That's going to be a pretty much set thing. And then how you handle your data at the bottom there, the model, really depends on how much data you collect and what you do with it. So your resource allocation really comes down to how many samples do you collect every time you're out there and how many times do you go out. And so, again, if you're looking at the accuracy of an individual flux estimate, frequency matters. The more frequently you sample, the better estimate you'll get for that individual event. A single time point with an ambient air sample, if you choose the right time interval, will give you the same data as using multiple time points. And in terms of what we're looking at for our research, we've used this to sort of modify the way that we sample. So we go out now early on. You take, if you get a big rainfall event, falling fertilizer, we'll go out 24 hours later, 48 hours later, 72 hours later. We try and turn the data around as quickly as we can, and at 72 hours, if we're not seeing a big emission, we stop. If we're still seeing big emissions, we go out again. And then we might not go out for 2 weeks because at background emissions, a single data point doesn't make a whole lot of difference. There are small diurnal variations in there, and the automated chamber data is so detailed that there are possibilities that there's information there that we're not really looking at. I like to, if you look at the ends of the curves, there's not really a lot going on. But if you blow them up, there are diurnal variations in there. And personally, I think that if you're looking at long-term systems, if you looked at something that was a permanent grassland versus something that had been in continuous weed or a diverse rotation, that there might be information in that part of the curve that we're currently not looking at. But in terms of just making these treatment comparisons, I don't think you need four data points. I'm not opposed to four data points, but on large data sets, Shane Ogilvie gave a talk this morning, 288 chambers out. If you're doing four data points every time you're out, you're 1,152 gas samples every time you go to the field. She went to the field 40 times last year. That's almost 48,000 gas samples for just her study. It's not really feasible. We need to be able to cut down and still maintain good quality data. And I think we can do that as long as you sort of take the opportunity to figure out what's that best time interval for your situation. And once you've got that, then you sort of figure out how to place your frequency. And that really depends on weather patterns, when fertilizer is applied, when other operations are going on. You have to be strategic in where you sample and how you sample. We are convinced that you can get by using time zero as your using ambient air as your time zero and using a single data point. For us, it's in, say, a 15 to 25 minute range for the different sites that we've looked at. That works well for us. For other sites, it might be a little bit shorter, it might be a little bit longer. We have CO2 data that sort of complements this. The same thing happens, except everything shortens up. So 10 minutes. You know, 8 to 12 minutes is probably a really good time for CO2. So depending on the gas, depending on what you're doing, you can adjust this. You can allocate your resources differently, and I think this works. And so at that point, there's a lot of other people who do this who actually sort of collect all this data and then give it to Reynolds and I. We're more sort of casually obsessed with methods than most people, so that's what we work on. And at that point, I'll happy to quit.
Given the high amount of variability in agroforestry systems, I know we're going to be hearing about the data from it, but sampling-wise,
I mean, we use larger chambers for one thing. We try and improve, use bigger footprints depending on where we are. These, because it's in a canola field with a 9-inch spacing, the chambers basically are 9 inches by 9 inches or thereabouts. So when we're out in a system like that, we would use bigger chambers to get a bigger footprint on it and hopefully put more replicates. That's part of this, is if you use shorter time samples, the total number of samples you have depends upon how you allocate them. If we do a single time point in ambient air, I can afford to put more replicates out in the field and use that to sort of take over some of the spatial variability that we would normally see with this. So I think that's what it's all about, is, for as far as I'm concerned, is the strategic sampling. Is where do you put your money? I think you get a better estimate of what the fluxes are if you sample more frequently, take a fewer gas samples each one, and maybe add some replication to everything. That'll cover some of the spatial variability as well.